This COVID-19 pandemic has affected our working lives in very varied ways. You might be working more or much less or working from home. But more people are physically returning to work now, and that's bringing up some unique challenges for both employers and employees. I'd love to hear what your concerns are about the mass return to work. Pop up a comment on our Facebook page and join the discussion there. Stephen Pem is a work health and safety consultant with Action OHS Consulting. Stephen, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi, Hilary. How are you going?
Good. And Liberty Sanger is a principal with Maurice Blackburn with a specialty in workplace injury law. Liberty, great to have you here.
Hi, Hilary.
Stephen, from an employer's perspective, what does this pandemic mean for how they manage their workplace? How different is it to other kinds of OHS issues?
Look, it's probably a little bit different in that it sort of overlaps between the workplace and home and everything else. Employers under the various OHS legislation around Australia have a duty to provide a safe workplace. But when you're looking at a pandemic type hazard such as COVID-19, it becomes a little bit complex. It's about defining things that can happen to employers in workplaces versus things that can happen to employers outside of workplaces. Of course, with a pandemic, if you were to pick up a COVID infection, the challenge is, I guess, proving that it actually occurred in the workplace. Employers certainly have a duty to their workers in the workplace around COVID-19, and it's really beholden to employers who control the resources and the means to provide a clean workplace for their workers. But in the event of a worker testing positive to COVID-19, the challenge would be determining exactly where they picked up the infection.
And Liberty, is there any legal precedent for that kind of question?
Well, we've already seen some of the work cover agencies around the country accept work cover claims. So, yes, there is. The legal test will be whether the disease arose out of or in the course of employment. In some states, we also have what's called presumptive legislation, which is if the nature of your employment gives rise to a significantly higher risk of contracting the disease, you are presumed to have contracted it at that workplace. So, I mean, I think the message for employers is, there's a lot of information out there about what you need to do to make your workplace as safe as possible. You need to make sure that you are meeting all of those standards. This is not the time to be cutting corners. If you do, then, yes, as Stephen said, you may have people presenting to work who have been exposed elsewhere, but they will then be coming into your workplace and infecting others. There'll be no doubt about your liability with respect to the others. There may be a question about the person who contracts it elsewhere. But also I think from the point of view of being a good citizen, you don't want to be the employer that has the outbreak. And given that we do know so much about what you can do to prevent or minimise the risk of further exposure, it really does mean that you've got to take all those steps.
Just quickly on a side note too, what about if you contracted on public transport on the way to work or from work? What are the employer's responsibilities there?
Oh, it's a great question. In some states, the legislation means that the employer will be liable. So they're called journey claims. So in some states, the employer is liable for that. In other states, the employer isn't. Getting that absolute question of proof nailed about where the exposure took place may be difficult. If that person contracts it on public transport but brings it into your workplace, as I said, there may be some ambiguity about whether you're liable for that person, but there won't be any ambiguity about whether you're liable for everybody else.
And Stephen Pem, Liberty mentioned a lot of information out there about what you can be doing as an employer to make your workplace safe. And I think Safe Work Australia has put out a lot of guidelines. How comprehensive are they? Do they cover all the different kinds of workplaces and all the different kinds of challenges that might arise, do you think?
Look, I think they're comprehensive in the sense that they tell you what you have to do to ensure or to minimise the risk of infection in your workplace. in terms of being specific for each industry, they're probably not as prescriptive as that, but the legislation for health and safety is what we call a principles-based legislation. So it's really up to employers to provide the means of making their workplaces safe, because they know their workplaces better than anyone else. Really, if it's all about cleaning, and promoting personal hygiene and so on, the important thing, the approach is the same across all workplaces. Can I also say, Hilary, just to support what Liberty was saying, work cover claims are a no-fault system. So if you pick up an infection in the workplace, even if you do something silly, it's likely you'd have a work cover claim awarded in that case.
Good to know. We're chatting with Stephen Pem, Occupational Health and Safety Consultant, and Liberty Sanger, Principal with Maurice Blackburn, with a specialty in workplace injury law. And we'd love to hear your thoughts and concerns about the time we're in, where a lot of people are starting to return to work. What challenges might that raise, and what questions does that raise for you? Head to our Facebook page, Life Matters ABC RN, and pop a comment up on there. Liberty, what do you think some of the flashpoints will be in office? Can we assume that hot desking is a thing of the past?
Absolutely. You know, what a shame, because that was one of the things that we thought would make offices more open and get collaboration going. But we'll replace hot desking with hot Zooming, I suspect. Hot desking is out. It's just going to be too hard to make sure that you've got a clean environment where the infection has been removed, so can't do that. Just being in an environment and making sure you are 1.5 metres apart from people at all times. So employers making sure they've got enough space and they're controlling the number of people that are coming and going. Being conscious of areas that you've not really thought much about before, like the kitchen. You know, people are often coming and going, people are touching the surfaces. People are leaving food and in the fridge, and you know there's always a demand on those areas at particular points in the day. Having a system around how you control who's in and who's out and what you're bringing into that kitchen. There'll probably be an increased demand on kitchens, because it's not going to be that easy to pop out and grab something at a cafe, particularly if you're in a CBD environment. I think a lot of these restrictions are going to be a lot harder to achieve in CBDs than they are in suburban and regional areas. But where you've got, you know, lifts, well, let's go back to the start of the journey. You've got the journey to work, you've got the lift when you arrive, you've got all the surfaces you touch as you try and go into the building, you've got to stay 1.5 metres apart. You've got to try and minimise meetings with others where you can. You should be doing those over a video conference device. And then you've got your bathrooms and your kitchens that we've previously not had to have any sort of rosters or systems around, but you're really going to have to be very, very careful about how you use those spaces.
So we might see a system like they have in schools, staggered recess and lunchtimes for office workers as well. Stephen Pem, what about in non-office spaces? If you're in, say, a construction site where we've already seen concerns raised about the ability to distance, in childcare, in hospitality, things like that, would there be particular challenges in those workspaces?
Yeah, look, I think there will be. I think staying socially distanced will be more of a challenge, and personal hygiene will be more of a challenge, because these are often dirty workplaces. There'll also be, I think, some conflict in responsibilities, because principal contractors on workplaces over a certain amount, it's roughly $350,000 in Victoria, have a duty to provide a safe work site, but subcontractors on the site also, the employer of the subcontractor has a duty to provide a safe workplace for that worker. So things like shared first aid kits may be an issue. who has responsibility if a worker develops an illness on site or is seriously injured, who provides the first aid. Even first aid will be challenging because, you know, the first aider, while they have a duty to preserve life, also have a need to preserve their own life. So they may not be keen to get within 1.5 metres of the person who's injured. So there will be complexity out and about. People who are travelling and going into work, other workplaces, will certainly find it interesting, I guess, in a strange new world, in that it'll be not be known how workers in that host workplace respond to visitors. They may even have a rule of no visitors at all. So, look, I think each of these scenarios present unique challenges, and I think it's a real opportunity for employers to look at the way they work and look at how they can how they can do it with a minimisation to business.
We've had texts coming in on this. Gray says, I hate to tell you this, but my department's recent briefing confirmed that hot desking continues, so I hope they've got their cleaning regimes well and truly in place. And another one says, in the entertainment industry, we've been told we're not covered by insurance for COVID-19. No insurance available if we get sick at work. Liberty Sanger, can you shed any light on the situation there in the entertainment industry?
Well, that's just not true. So, unless they're not a worker under any of the Workers' Compensation Acts, they will be covered. So there is no carve-out for the entertainment industry. Even beyond that, as Stephen mentioned earlier, the obligations under the OHS Acts for employers to provide safe workplaces can extend well beyond someone that is a worker under the Workers' Compensation Acts. One other thing, yeah. There are always common law claims as well, not available in every state or not readily available, but common law claims if there are significant injuries. And so they don't rely specifically on these Workers' Compensation Acts. So if, in the event that someone is not a worker but the exposure occurred at a particular place and that company did not take reasonable steps, there's plenty of information out there, didn't take reasonable steps to prevent the risk of contracting the disease, then they may well be liable at common law.
Stephen, when we go back to work, it's going to be partly about trusting that your employer is going to be doing all these things that are represented in the guidelines from Safe Work Australia, but also about trusting that your co-workers are doing the right thing. Who is it going to be policing that? Is this going to be a team effort, or does it need some really clear, strong guidance from the top down?
Well, Hillary, that's a $64 question. If I could answer that, I wouldn't be on this show. I'd be making millions. I'm excited in a weird sort of way about this because I'm passionate about health and safety, and I think the COVID hazard risk area is a microcosm of what we should all be doing to help each other and protect each other in workplaces. Certainly as an individual, you have a duty to yourself to stay clean and hygienic. So washing your hands, using sanitizers and so on. If you're hot desking, cleaning your workstation, a keyboard and so on with a antiviral sanitizer. To me, they're no-brainers. But look, I accept some people won't do that because humans are fallible. You know, humans aren't the first line of defense when we're managing safety. We want to take the decision-making out of humans' hands if we possibly can. So calling out your neighbour, calling out your colleague if they're not doing the right thing, even down to things like leaving scraps of food and you know, the absolute no-no will be used tissues on your desk. I think this is a real opportunity for people to work together. I think it's an opportunity for people to have input into how they're managing this risk. And that approach to management will change over time, but having that constant refreshing and saying how are we going and reviewing the effectiveness of what you're doing, I think it's a great opportunity. The role of managers will be to drive this. Managers, if they're smart, will become the OHS champions, and each individual manager will be constantly checking in with their team, whether they're working remotely or in the workplace, asking how things are going, asking if there are any issues.
Liberty, the ACTU released a survey last week of over 1,300 people, and it found that employers had adopted distancing measures for 70% of workers who were still in their workplace. Only 11% reported additional hygiene measures, including access to soap and sanitizer, and even fewer had a plan to, as to how to respond if staff developed symptoms. How concerning is this from when we look at the liabilities that might ensue down the track and the human fallout?
Oh, it's very concerning. We know this pandemic does not discriminate. So if you're not motivated by the need to help others, you should absolutely be motivated by the need to preserve and help yourself and particularly your loved ones. So if you fail to provide a safe place of work, you're not only putting at risk the lives of everyone who comes to work for you and any customers, contractors, anyone else who comes on site, but you're putting at risk yourself, your own family, your neighbours, and anyone that you interact with. I really, really, really understand how difficult this time has been for many people, a lot of workers who are very desperate to get back to work and start earning money. I think our job is to find a way to ensure that we are supporting everyone through this because it's not in anyone's interests for the rules to be broken or corners to be cut on safety.
Another really interesting point, though, about that survey, if I could go to Stephen on this, was that 0% of people still in their workplace said their employer had made any effort to support their mental health. And we've seen how high tensions can rise during this pandemic. Stephen, what responsibilities do employers have in that field, in the mental and emotional health of their staff?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, worker wellness and worker well-being, if it's impacted by activities going on in the workplace, is an employer responsibility. Employers, as we said, have a responsibility to provide a safe workplace. In the scenario that an employer is not taking any steps to manage this risk or any other risk, it's likely that workers are going to be pretty nervous. They're going to be nervous anyway returning to the workplace, and that'll only be heightened if they're being forced to not to social distance and they don't have ready access to sanitising materials and so on. There's definitely a worker an employer responsibility in this area. Some of the challenges around mental health are similar to what sort of aligned with this pandemic. I mean, proving that the mental health consequences of an employer are directly contributed by the activities in the workplace is a challenge. And I think that's going to blur even more because if employees are still working from home, then you've got the home-based challenges that start to blend in with the workplace. And I think this is really going to be a really interesting area.
Definitely.
My advice to employers is to manage things before they start having acute consequences. And that's going to start on day one when employers return to the workplace.
And just quickly and finally, Liberty Sanger, can you refuse to go to work if you're worried about the health and safety aspects of what's going on there?
You would need to go and see a doctor. There need to be medical reasons for you to not present at work. So you need a sick leave certificate. But if you are fit and healthy to go to work and your employer wants you there, then you don't have a basis for not being there. So it will come down to whether or not your doctor says you're fit or unfit for work.
This is one of those really fascinating points where individual and collective responsibilities come together, I think. It's been fascinating talking to you both about it today on Life Matters. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Hilary.
Thank you very much, Hilary.
Liberty Sanger, Principal with Maurice Blackburn with Specialty in Workplace Injury Law. Stephen Pem is an Occupational Health and Safety Consultant. And if you're after more information relating to specific sectors, the Safe Work Australia website has lots, or contact your state-based work health and safety body. They're usually called Safe Work or WorkSafe, interestingly enough.